WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
In his final season coaching the Los Angeles Lakers, Phil Jackson had to deal with conflicts between superstars Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal, who's now with the Miami Heat. And Jackson had to keep the team focused as Bryant faced sexual assault charges, which put him in the middle of a media circus. Now Jackson has written a memoir called The Last Season, A Team in Search of Its Soul. Jackson holds the NBA coaching record for most playoff wins. He won 6 NBA championships with the Chicago Bulls when it included Michael Jordan, Dennis Rodman, and Scottie Pippen. Jackson won 3 championships with the Lakers. In his last season, the Lakers lost to the Detroit Pistons in the finals. I spoke with him about his new memoir. You talk, of course, about the rape charges against Kobe Bryant, and you say, was I surprised? Yes, but not entirely. Why not?
Well, I think that, having been around Kobe and seen, his willpower, his commitment to doing what he wants to do when he wants to do it, his ability to be forceful and angry, has shown some of the characteristics that could have, behaved in that pattern. But, no one knows what's behind closed doors. And, I refuse to speculate in that area at all.
How have you seen his anger manifested on the basketball court?
Well, in a variety of ways. Some of it at his teammates and some of it at himself and his opponents and some at referees. Some of it at me. In fact, that was probably one of the things that really changed our relationship in the last year. Prior to this, was that there were some heated words, vitriolic words, as I actually said to Kobe, that we can't have that. It's too destructive to have that vitriolic kind of hot flow coming out of you towards me, because it undermines what the team has to do. And we reached an impasse. We reached an impasse at some point, and were able to overcome that during the course of the year. And that basically is really the story of this book, is that maybe it was my approach, maybe it was my reticence to jump in with both feet, to leave Kobe alone and allow him to have all this space around a trial, a very trying time, accusations that were damning, a possible, sentence that would be, prohibitive to even playing basketball, perhaps, let alone destroying his life. Were things that, I wanted to stay apart from and back away from. And in reality, I think the book shows that the more involved I was with Kobe, the better off our relationship was. And rather than standing back and allowing him to have all this space, I needed to be involved and proactive and take advantage of the fact that, he was searching perhaps for a discipline, and he was searching perhaps for a leadership from me.
Are you surprised that he didn't sit the season out?
It was a consideration. And it was a consideration not only that we expressed to him and asked him about it in a meeting in August with him a year ago last August, but also something that we talked about between the general manager and myself, that, is it, going to be necessary for him to sit out? And at some point during the season, it was even suggested by me that maybe it was better if Kobe sat out for a while, and because his presence on the team was distraction, and I felt that it was a conflict for me to have to coach, especially when he wasn't capable of playing, and he was injured, a dozen games or so in last season's during the course of the last season.
You talk in your book about how you were concerned about how Kobe Bryant would mature coming of age in the NBA, which he joined when he was still in high school. What were some of your concerns?
When I began coaching the Lakers in 1999-2000 season, I believe Kobe just had turned 21, and I saw a young man who was living with his parents, even though he had moved into a separate house, and they kind of had spaces right next door to each other. They had kind of a compound in a Brentwood area of Los Angeles. And he had yet to have a relationship with a girl that was known about. His coming and goings were really monitored a lot by his parents, who had tried to, you know, monitor his development involvement in the NBA. His father had been an NBA player, known as Jelly Bean Bryant, and played with Philadelphia 76ers during the early 70s, and eventually went on to Italy to play for most of his career in the Italian leagues over there. But they knew what the NBA lifestyle was like. They knew the pitfalls of it, and they did want to make sure that Kobe's life was monitored and, you know, eased, and he had a way to get into the NBA without the shock of just dropping him in there. And so they had moved as a family out to L.A. So what I saw was a young man who was going to go through all the rebellion that you normally go through when your child goes off to college. He goes off to college. He learns how to take care of himself. He learns how to wash his clothes, feed himself, and doesn't call, perhaps doesn't answer the phone, has a rebellion attitude that is a way that children break away from their parents. And as they break away from their parents and they get involved in relationships with people of the opposite sex, they start to break away even farther philosophically. And because of Kobe's sheltered past, I saw that this was a young man that more than likely was going to have to go through all those growth processes during a course of playing basketball, while he was involved very tightly in his family life, and have to make the movement towards maturation under a microscope. He wasn't going to be given that opportunity to do it in college where, you know, if you even have a college season where you're a high-profile college athlete, it might only be for 3.5 months on a college campus. It's not for an 8-month or 9-month period of time, which might involve an MBA year. So the spotlight was on his growth and development, and I knew that rebellion might even hold rebellion against the coach, who is an authority figure behind all that.
And that would be you.
That would be me.
You think he rebelled against you?
I think so. And, you know, I don't want to make any inference that I, you know, was a father figure to him, but there was a relationship that we had that was a real strong relationship at the start. And you know, he had to find his own way and had to, you know, step out on his own. And you know, I think that my coaching influence over Kobe Bryant lasted only maybe 2.5 years of the 5 years that I was here with the Lakers in L.A.
My guest is Phil Jackson, former coach of the Chicago Bulls and the Los Angeles Lakers. His new memoir is about his final season with the Lakers. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Phil Jackson, and he has a new memoir about his last season with the Lakers, and it's called The Last Season. Now, the two superstars of this team during your last season were Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal. I mean, they were the superstars of the team through your tenure at the Lakers. Do you think their relationship changed in any fundamental way during your final season, which was also Shaquille O'Neal's final season with the team?
I don't think it changed that much, Terry. I think it was pretty much set. They'd reached a certain impasse, and it was just brought back into reality at the beginning of the season before the first game. The conflict that happened between the two of them in the paper solidified, okay, this is how it's going to be. We're not going to ever find a real common ground to live from, but we can coexist together. Just don't disrespect me was kind of the message that Shaq had led, you know, Kobe to know. And Kobe was, don't tell me how to play my game. I'm my own person. I'm not your sidekick. And that was the message I think the two of them wanted to get across to each other. And other than that, I felt that they were dedicated to winning a championship. And they were going to find a way to get to this position, regardless of how much angst and how much difficulty this team was going to provide to them.
What did you try to do to straighten out their relationship?
Well, there's all kinds of ways, and, you know, from actually running two-man games on the court with him to you know, conferencing them together. But, you know, I think the reality was that I didn't use professional help, and I probably should have used conflict resolution or had some professional help come in that could be trusted, would feel appropriate support for both of them, not have a valence of plus or minus with either one of these two players so they didn't feel the other person was being favored, and had them really work on a relationship that made some sense to them, that these are the things that are evident. Kobe, you're never going to make the same amount of money that Shaq is. Shaq, you're never going to be able to bring the ball down the court and do whatever you want to do with it. And you're going to have to rely on Kobe bringing the ball down the court. You guys are going to have to find a way to play together to make this thing work out to the best of our ability and support each other in these situations, because that's what a team's all about.
At what point did you decide, you say in your book at some point you decided that you couldn't stay on the team if Kobe Bryant stayed. What was like the tipping point for you on that?
You know, there are a number of incidents that preceded for about, 6 weeks or so. And, you know, I try not to get into them all, but as we went along, there was just one that eventually, caught me off guard. And it was simply, the fact that he didn't come on the court and participate in a practice when he had said he was going to, and Kobe'd had an injury, a shoulder injury, and he didn't have to come on the court to participate in practice. He had to be out in the court to watch or observe. But I asked him if he's going to come out, and he said, yeah, sure. And then when he didn't participate, I asked him why, and he said in very coarse language, because of my blank shoulder. And I said, I didn't know it hurt you that bad. And he said, well, you didn't ask. And then it led from one thing to another, where finally I just said, I'd like you just to be straight with me and square up. And, as I turned to leave the room, I heard, some profanity behind me. And, that was, I just kept going and went to the general manager's office and said, I don't think I can reach this young man anymore. And I don't think it's, I'm the right person to continue on in this job. So if you're going to keep Kobe Bryant on this team, then I don't think we need to continue our contract negotiations. And you can tell the owner that, and walked out of the room. And, it's kind of described in the book as a tirade, but I don't think it reached tirade proportions. But it was firm, and I was angry.
This is a pretty personal book, not only, it contains a lot of reflections about other people and reflections about your conflicts with other people on the mm-hmm. team, but particularly Kobe Bryant. And I just wonder how you feel about making some of those conflicts more public than you'd made them before.
Well, it was something that obviously, I had to just sit on a long time this summer and think about, be reassured that, even though that it was personal, it's not about that. It's about the story. And it's got to be about the bigger picture that's in that story. It's not about the conflicts that happen. It's about the resolution that happens. It's about the fact that even in a resolution that happens, there wasn't enough fertile ground or enough foundation for us to have total success. And it's a near miss. And that in itself is intriguing in its own right. So the story itself stands out, even though it's personal and even though there are names used. It's about the acts as people. It's not about the people themselves.
Do you know how Kobe Bryant has reacted to your book?
Yes, he said, and very, very, very rightly so, that this is about a book in which Phil's trying to sell books. This is something, and he stated some things that it's about selling books because it's controversial. And, Kobe's really good with the press, and I think he's reacted, and his statement was simply this: I really respect the time I spent with Phil Jackson and our chance to team together and win some championships. And that's the professional, side of Kobe Bryant that always steps forward.
Are you worried what he'll say about you when he writes his memoir?
Not really. I think that, it'll be even-handed because I've been honest and heartfelt with him.
So do you want to get back into basketball again in some capacity or another?
I don't know, Terry. I think the year will really answer that question.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to remain open to it without trying to be, like remorseful or, you know, indebted to basketball. I want to remove myself from it so I have a chance to really, you know, assess, you know, do I want to be part of this? Is it fruitful? Is it, consistently a good way to, spend my time? And when you're almost 60 years old, you don't have a whole lot of time left, and that's important.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us, and I wish you good travels.
Thank you very much, Terry. It's always a pleasure to be on your show. You have a wonderful show.
Phil Jackson's new memoir is called The Last Season, A Team in Search of Its Soul.